thank you everyone for joining us for this concise and informative discussion by Dr. Michael Wald. Dr. Wald, you have many degrees and certifications in the areas of nutrition and health, including two board certifications in nutrition. You are a doctor of chiropractic with a master's in nutrition, and you are a certified nutritional specialist. You have published successful books on natural health, and right now we will be discussing diabetes recently diagnosed.
Okay,
it's questions from Kathy. And Kathy has sent an email in which she states that she has been diagnosed with diabetes type 2. She would like to know what else she could do besides medication to help herself. She also wants to know if she can cure her diabetes.
Okay. So, Kathy, diabetes type 2 is different than diabetes type 1. But for the sake of the shortness of this particular review, we're going to just give a quick definition of diabetes type 2. So that is non-insulin dependent. And you're on medications right now, Kathy, so at least one medication, and I'm guessing it's probably metformin. That's a very common medication that helps the body utilize insulin better and reduce insulin resistance. Mm-hmm. It also has some anti-aging science associated with it. So metformin may be one of these good drugs. But having said that, let's just jump to your very important question. Can you cure your diabetes? The possibility is there. It depends on the causes and extent of damage that diabetes may have been caused either in you or whoever else might be affected. But many people I'll see, and luckily they're on the early train of diabetes where their blood glucose is obviously elevated, which is part of the definition of diabetes, and their hemoglobin A1C. So hemoglobin A1C is also known as glycosylated hemoglobin. It's a very common test done by anyone in medicine who has any knowledge on how to manage and detect the last several months average of blood sugar. So the hemoglobin A1C tells us about 3 to 4 months average of blood sugar. Now you can have high blood sugars during that time, you can have very low blood sugars, and then the average might actually be normal, but you're having spikes. So you always want to check the growth hormone as well. I'll have to leave that for now in terms of the testing specifics, but depending on what you're willing to do, Kathy, in terms of lifestyle, are you willing to change your diet? Are you willing to look at eating what are known as low glycemic foods, which for some people matter? The whole glycemic index thing basically is that certain foods cause a rapid increase and a drop in blood sugar and others don't. But I found clinically that these lists of high and low and moderate hypoglycemic foods is not at all consistent. Mm-hmm. I've had patients study where they've eaten a steak and that caused more of a blood sugar issue than bread, than white bread, which is complete opposite of what you would think.
Yeah.
So, but it is still something a practitioner like myself would want to at least look at and explore to see if it has any relevance to you, and maybe it won't to someone else. And then there's exercise. The right form of exercise can do a lot to actually affect some of the underlying problems with metabolism and blood sugar management. We also know, and this is gonna seem strange to some of you, but I did not make this up, is that another major cause of diabetes is pollution. I was once asked to write a chapter in a book about this, and
first for me.
Yeah, okay. When I was asked about this, I don't know, about 10 years ago, it was the first for me as well. And I did some research over the weekend, and by that Monday, I was absolutely sold on this fact, because the medical literature showed, Sonny, that pollution, when you take it in, can be deposited in the pancreatic beta cells, which are the cells that make insulin. Mm-hmm. And then if you're not making insulin correctly, or insulin becomes insensitive because of toxins, then you have hyperglycemia, which can arise to the level of diagnosis of diabetes. So when we talk about detox in the other videos and we say, well, what do we detox, and this person has diabetes, we definitely want to consider the more common environmental pollutants that that person may be exposed to in a particular environment. And of course, we want to look at the diet. Sometimes the diet, as I mentioned, has to do with moving around of different foods that are thought to cause different levels of blood sugar fluctuations, but also the frequency of someone's meals matter. Sometimes eating more often is best for a diabetic. And other times, doing some sort of fasting, like an intermittent fast. Some studies have shown that intermittent fasting in a subgroup of people with diabetes can actually improve insulin resistance. So by reducing insulin resistance, you make insulin more available, less resistant, so insulin can work. And insulin brings glucose in the cells. Insulin in the cells. That's how you can sort of remember that. And that's what you want. So if your blood sugar is high, your insulin is not working well. You might produce enough insulin, but if it's insensitive, it's ignoring the sugar in a sense. Mm-hmm. Or maybe some proportion of it is not quite working right. Also, diabetes can be caused by hormonal issues. We know it is because insulin's a hormone. And then glucagon, which is a form of carbohydrate energy in the body, can be perturbed in how it works with insulin. And then that can, and since all hormones are floating around in the same environment, testosterone could be affected, and estrogens can be affected, and adrenal DHEA and cortisol can be affected. So sometimes we want to improve hormonal balance, which could impact diabetes. We know that diabetes, whether it's type 1 or type 2, Sunny, always is inflammatory, and both have an autoimmune component. We know that now. We didn't know that just a few years ago. So you would want to treat the autoimmune expression in the person. So I'd look at the rest of their labs beyond the blood sugar. But most doctors, internists and endocrinologists, they just care about hemoglobin A1Cs and glucose. And they don't look for inflammatory markers that could cause. They don't look at the hormone stuff that can cause it. And they may not look at the lifestyle factors because they're so quick to write prescriptions that they don't say, well, you know, what's your sleeping like? What are your stress levels like? Because stress and sleep problems can absolutely cause blood sugar problems. If you deprive someone of sleep, you can cause any problem. And obviously the food is important as well. So in general, I guess I can say about diabetes type 2, is we want to increase the protein in the diet, that's for sure, particularly in the morning, because during sleep, a person is fasting for quite a long time, and you want to offset fluctuations in blood sugar, so protein in the morning can help reset people to be a little more even throughout the day, but so can healthy fats as well. And then the combinations of the healthy fats, certain healthy forms of carbohydrates and proteins in a given meal. So sometimes we'll do some sort of intermittent fasting or sort of adjusted fasting schedule for the patient. We may look at meal timing, exercise relative to meals, and meals relative to exercise timing. And then, of course, there's the use of nutritional supplements. So some individuals just, for example, cannot get enough dietary, let's say, lipoic acid in. Lipoic acid is a compound in the B vitamin family, which has a very strong hypoglycemic effect. So it works extremely well for lowering blood sugar. The right dose within the right context of the other things that I mentioned. Because supplements they usually don't work, Sunny, alone. Mm. Like if you ignore diet and exercise, stress, and sleep, you know, to expect that lipoic acid, chromium, or cinnamon is going to help you is very unrealistic. Okay. Those are a few things that are very useful, and there are many other nutrients that we want to consider. And I have a mental list of them, but then there's that list, then there's the medical literature, what that says in nutrition literature, and then there's what the chemistry of the person shows. So I'll read the blood work like any doctor would, and then I nutritionally interpret the lab work by using different ranges of normal, which I've discussed on the blood detective video in this series, and the combination of those things, a total look at one's lifestyle, so that, Sunny, we can give a person very exacting, guidelines, so they don't have to be extreme. They just have to do what they need to do. Exactly. And we can figure that out based on, you know, careful questioning in all these areas that we've discussed today and some others.
And you can see why this has to be personalized, because there's so much involved, mm-hmm. but it can be easily tailored to that individual when yes. you have the right information to make that happen.
Yeah, and Sunny, that's the key. It's got to be tailored, because a lot of people see me, Sunny, after they have tried some things on their own, or even with other practitioners for years, when they were just doing general things, like, I don't understand, why is the cinnamon not working? Why is the magnesium not helping? Why is the zinc not helping to make insulin? So, you're not a textbook. We need to figure out what your needs actually are, and as you said, Sunny, we need to personalize it.
Great, great. This is great information. Thank you, Dr. Wong. Mm-hmm.